Do you want to make a change in your health and wellness and create a transformation? Remember, wellness is an inner job. Listen to the podcast From Outer Wellness to Inner Wellness with Dr. Naz Parsian and let's make the change happen.
Hello, Inner Wellness Seekers. We actually have another episode with an amazing friend, colleague, and absolutely legend in the area of health and wellness. Dr. Suzanne Henwood is a neuroscience-based coach and counselor. She works with an integrated toolbox to assist people to deeply reconnect with themselves to find their own inner wisdom. Suzanne started her professional life in radiography, moving into education, and over 25 years headed up postgraduate education in healthcare in a London university, later moving to New Zealand and spending nearly a decade as an associate professor for health and social sciences. Along the way, she began her exploration of what makes people tick. Why do some people excel? Why do some struggle? What impact does the environment play, especially around bullying, toxicity, isolation, exclusion, and the difference true leadership plays at an individual and corporate level? Today, Suzanne draws on NLP, embraining, havening, ACT, IDT, refocusing counseling, HeartMath, solution-focused brief therapy, polyvagal informed therapy, emotional culture depth, timeline therapy, oh my God, map of many, breathwork, mindfulness, Psyche Plus, existential coaching, and years of study and application to focus on deep inner change, stress and anxiety and trauma, and helping people to find wholeness and healing. Wow. Okay, I think we need at least 10 sessions to go through all of these modalities. Suzanne is an author, speaker, and regular contributor to the Great Health Guide and Rapport and Worldwide Coaching Magazines. And in 2022, she was a finalist in the ANLP Awards for Education and Research. In August 2022, her latest book is being published, The Ultimate Gratitude Journal. With no further ado, welcome to the show, Suzanne.
Hello, Naz.
Wow, such an amazing bio. Okay, I definitely feel that I need to invite you at least quite a few times to the podcast to discuss about these amazing modalities, because our health and wellness certainly need more and more, you know, going through all of this stuff. Okay, so tell us a little bit about yourself. What brought you, you know, to all of these amazing modalities?
Yeah, what a journey. And it's a journey that looked fragmented for a long time. And I wasn't quite sure where some of those bits fitted, especially my background in academia and medical imaging. And then gradually in the last 5 years or so, there's this beautiful weaving together. And I go, oh, I get it now. And where it's led me is this beautiful place where I can hold the complexity of health and illness, where I can hold the complexity of what brings somebody to a place where things are not okay in their body. Mm-hmm. And I can meet each individual where they're at. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do that before when I was reliant on one or two modalities.
Yeah.
So as I started to open up and get a wider brief of clients and patients coming in, I got challenged with my own belief of whether or not I was capable of looking after them and holding them and keeping them safe, mm-hmm. and helping them get out the other side. And so I took on more and more tools as that client base expanded. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I was largely working in kind of corporate executive style leadership, really. Mm-hmm. But from there, bullying and psychological safety in the workplace came up. And from there, that took me into stress. And from there, that took me into deep autonomic dysregulation. Mm-hmm. And so it's just been this beautiful gradual journey where I now feel largely I talk about being stress and anxiety based, but our conversations go so much wider and deeper than that.
I'm
in a beautifully privileged position that I can meet people where they're at and talk about virtually anything within that context. I'm still not a therapist. I'm not registered as a psychotherapist or a psychologist. I don't pretend to be. I have no desire to be. And so I will still quite often refer clients upwards into therapeutic practice. But I have absolutely moved away from pure coaching into a therapeutic coaching, a health-based coaching dynamic, which I just find such a privilege.
Yeah, that's so amazing. Yeah, for the audience who possibly don't know how I know Suzanne, I'm just, going to give a little bit of introduction. It was, I guess, how many years ago? Was it about 10 years ago, Suzanne?
Yeah, eight,
maybe. Yeah, actually, one morning, I woke up with a very interesting email that asked me about my research, my PhD research project that, included a questionnaire that I designed for spirituality. And it was so actually, exciting. And I just said, yay, someone is interested in my project. Because at the time, Suzanne, that wasn't actually really popular to talk about spirituality in health. These days are more popular. And I got so excited. And the language Suzanne used in the email was so heart-touching. It was so heart-touching. And, straight away, Suzanne, I connected to you, in that email. And I just said, yes and yes, I want to see these people. And yeah, I never forget the meeting we had, and we just discussed about, spirituality, questionnaire designing, all of those. And I understand that you validated a better questionnaire after that, decision making. So it's possibly something for another another episode. Yes, I think, I'm kind of in the latest 10 years, I'm kind of witnessing, your journey. And I really, admire it, because I totally relate to it as a person involved with both sides of, therapeutic and educational areas in health and wellness. And I definitely feel the gap, the biggest gap as an academic nurse. I feel the biggest gap in our health in, I don't know, it's a little bit sad, but we definitely need to do something. So that's why my next question. So how, or what did you find interesting when you worked as, when you worked, in radiography is very different area. Yeah. But how do you relate that area and academia to where you are now? So yeah. Did it help in your journey?
So it is this beautiful woven kind of mat that is coming together. So the medical imaging, my expertise in medical imaging was in trauma. So fast thinking, not knowing what was going to come through the door, being able to think on your feet and adapt techniques. Well, there's a lot of commonality from those skills to coaching. I don't know what's going to come through the door. Even if someone has had a chemistry call with me and says, I'm coming for stress or whatever it is, actually stress has got a million and one definitions. And so until I meet them and know what their version of stress is and how they're doing life, how it's impacting on life, I just don't know. So there's a lot of kind of the acute nature of it. I think there's a huge similarity with the diagnostic radiography in trauma. Mm-hmm. In terms of the neuroscience, where I've now landed is I don't have anything in my toolbox that hasn't got good evidence base and neuroscience base behind it. Mm-hmm. So my academic roots are still the foundation on which I practice.
Yeah.
And when I look back, a lot of that evidence base is created through medical imaging, through MRI scans or PET scans.
Mm-hmm.
So again, there's this beautiful weaving together so that I can understand the evidence at a probably deeper level than some other coaches, because I also understand the scanning and how they've created or kind of got that data.
Yeah.
So yeah, I find it fascinating in terms of the pathway to get where I am now. I would never have dreamed, if you even 10 years ago, I would never have dreamed I would be where I am now doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have it any other way. I love what I do. I think we're at a cusp of a massive change, a paradigm shift of change.
Mm-hmm.
I keep hearing myself say we need to reimagine mental health care.
Yeah.
And I want to stop calling it mental health care, because the minute you do, it sits in the therapeutic realm. And then people go, mine, I own it.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about therapeutic mental health care. That is always going to be a need. There are always going to be people at that level. I'm a supervisor, and I had a supervision session with an amazing lady today who absolutely works in that therapeutic space.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a completely different place to where I do my client work. So I'm talking about people who are strong and capable and intelligent,
mm-hmm.
and yet life and in the environment and stressors around them are causing them to become dysregulated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have so much to offer to help them rewire the body,
mm-hmm.
get back into regulation, that knocks on to all the health systems, GI, cardiac, immune.
Yeah,
it starts with understanding the nervous system,
mm-hmm.
at a level that I never learned within the healthcare field.
That totally makes sense. This is exactly what I was talking about, the biggest gap, because I feel that we basically treat different aspects of a human, you know, being separately. And that is the biggest problem. And that's perhaps the reason why we fail in management of chronic illnesses, management of, I totally agree with you about the term of mental health. I'm not 100%, you know, supporting this term as well. But yeah, how we fail managing mental health, you know, whatever they call it, how we fail managing chronic illnesses, how we fail managing just stress, anxiety, and, you know, the biggest gap is, yes, you actually worded it beautifully, dysregulation between these, you know, pieces as a whole, because they are not pieces as separate. But what we do in our medical system, in our healthcare system, in our education, you know, I have to admit, you know, as an academic, that yes, we actually fail in our curriculum addressing the holistic vision, the complex, you know, holistic. So what do you suggest? Because we actually, you know, understand our languages, and I'm sure, you know, we have perhaps in the audience a lot of people who are involved with, you know, in their profession with health and wellness. What do you suggest as a first step to fill this gap?
Huge question, Naz. I think it's a bit like I'm going right back to, we see people as complex dynamic human systems.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare is also a complex dynamic system. So I don't think there's an easy fix. But I think if we could just pause and reflect,
mm-hmm.
and instead of, I love the phrase, stop trying to rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I like it.
Which is what I feel like we've been doing for a long time in healthcare, and particularly mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And actually have the courage to say, and what else?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because in the last 10 to 20 years, my experience is that there are so many other complementary therapies,
mm-hmm.
that can be safely used, that have a solid evidence base, that could absolutely be incorporated as part of the solution.
Yeah.
But because they're seen as a threat, because they're in crowd, out crowd, you're not a psychologist, you're not a psychotherapist.
That's right, yeah.
You can't possibly be safe. You can't possibly, you know, I've been training for 25 years to do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they say I'm not trained enough.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, oh, I totally hear you. That's, yeah, that's because that's my problem too. And yeah, and why actually, you know, why we have to stick to the things that are not actually working. So what I think we need to aim is improving health, simply improving, you know, human's health and improving human's wellness. So yeah. why are not we open to different modalities or people's, you know, real experiences, true experiences and knowledge that they can share with the world for this improvement? That's sad.
Yeah, we've come up in a system where not that long ago, and certainly within your and my time within healthcare practice, doctors were gods.
Yeah.
They told patients what to do. They told patients what was wrong. And nobody was allowed to question them.
Yeah.
They had complete control.
Mm-hmm.
And we've kind of done a pendulum swing to patient-informed care, but without fully educating patients about what they're making informed choice on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know there are lots of patients who are then given the choice and they don't know how to make that choice. They need the expert medical opinion to help them make the choice. And it's like we've lost our way somewhere in taking the medics off of the pedestals. We've left everybody floating free without the structure to be able. And there's this risk, less so over here in New Zealand, but certainly when I was in the UK, the risk that if you get it wrong, you're sued.
Okay.
And so that everybody, I think, is feeling a little bit unsupported.
Yeah.
And frightened of any major change, because what if they opened the doors to people like me?
Yeah.
And we made horrible mistakes. And I think there is a need for standards and for, you know, coaches are not regulated.
Mm.
Anyone can call themselves a coach. Anyone could call themselves a health coach.
Yeah. That's the point. Yeah.
Not everybody has had 25 years of good, solid, evidence-based training to be safe.
Yeah.
And so there's part of me that totally gets the resistance to include us, which is why I think there needs to be some bravery in being curious, being open, and beginning to ask the question, well, what else would we allow to have a place with boundaries around it?
I do not do
therapeutic work. So, you know, I know that I'm safe in the scope of practice I work within. So whatever we do, we need to teach scopes of practice and safety alongside
Yes. Totally agree. You know, I'm you know, in the same boat. I've been actually doing for a couple of years a little bit of, you know, therapy things, but then I felt that I'm possibly more into educating and training and teaching, because that's what I did, you know, for more than two decades. And that's the thing that I'm, you know, able more to help with. However, I don't know, I think, you know, there must be a balance between, you actually brought a very good point about coaching. While, you know, there are amazing coaches there, and we have actually the coaching industry now, you know, which is very popular in the world. But it's a little bit challenging that, you know, it's lived experiences are super important, definitely important, because this is perhaps part of evidence-based practice as well. However, it's not the only one. It's not the only one. And the only reason that I'm a coach and I can actually, I don't know, direct people for better health or for better, whatever it is, cannot be I have gone through it myself. It is a very important point, but I think it is not enough. Yeah, what do you think about it?
I totally agree. I do not need to have gone through, I don't know, redundancy to coach someone on, you know, experience about redundancy.
Yeah.
I do not need to have had kidney failure to coach someone around making healthy decisions and getting a regulated autonomic state.
Yeah.
So I certainly don't believe that, but I do think there needs to be a level of knowledge and understanding.
Yes.
That goes deeper than, you know, some of the very short courses. Some of the courses I've done have been quite short, and I have sat there nervous at what is being said within them about what those people can go and do.
Yeah.
When they come in with zero relevant experience and they suddenly think they can go out and treat, you know, whatever, PTSD, yeah, OCD, or,
yeah,
and that, that really does worry me. However, what also worries me is the extreme of that, where,
yeah,
a coaching body, you know, and there are a few who are, I think, trying to take this stance, where they become the only regulator.
Yeah.
And when they're not of the same, they're certainly not of the same mindset about coaching that I am.
Yeah.
And so while I think we need regulation, I would oppose profusely being forced into a regulatory system that has no idea what we do in current coaching.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, tell us a little bit about that regulatory system.
Well, it doesn't exist for coaching at the moment, but I know there are some people who are, you know, are definitely trying to put themselves out there as the one coaching body. And one of the biggest one of those I have looked into, just to go, should I, just in order to play the game and to have their, you know, stamp of approval and logo on my page. But when I look at what their definition of coaching is, it doesn't cover what I do.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So the definition of coaching is a little bit challenging because they say coaching is not teaching. It's not training. So I think, you know, just sticking too much to these boxes,
yep,
perhaps, you know, it's not the best idea.
And back to my complex dynamic system again.
That's again, absolutely. So the human system is so complex. So we actually have, you know, doctors or GPs or, you know, the conventional medicine on one side who are basically focusing only on one specific aspect and just, you know, go straight away to just prescribe something. Okay, you get that, fix it, no information about diet, about mental health, about emotions, about And on the other side, we have the coaching, the other side of the spectrum, we have coaching who is only focusing on, okay, I've done that and you should do this. Let's go. And I think, you know, none of these sides address that complexity.
There are some beautiful movements in the middle of that at the moment. Health coaching is recommended in all GP practices in America, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at what it means, it's not the definition of health coaching I use.
Yeah.
We've got HIPS, Health Improvement Partner Scheme, I think it stands for, over in New Zealand. But again, they're on a very restricted how long they can see the patient for, how many times they can see them, and what they can do in that. So I think there's some really good steps opening up, and there's an acknowledgement and awareness of what can be slotted into that place. The risk at the moment, from my point of view, is that they're trying to slot it into the old medical model.
Yeah, 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 I agree, yeah. I think that's a risk, exactly, yes.
I'm incredibly lucky. I work with a GP practice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not employed by them,
mm-hmm,
but I work with a GP who, knowing what I do, and bless him, he came and trained as an MBIC coach with me, so mm-hmm, he could understand what I do before.
Oh, we have actually a lot of amazing GPs who understand. Yeah, definitely.
And he refers patients to me who have pitched up at his clinic with a medical condition that he believes has a stress component.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't just medicate. He says, go and work in parallel with Suzanne. Mm-hmm. I'll look after the, you know, the medical kind of history and clinical data, and we work together and we get them back on their feet.
Yeah.
The research shows up to 85% of people who present at a GP practice are there because of stress.
Exactly. Yes. And I think, you know, another number that says only 3 or 5% receive stress management.
Yeah.
Or along 85%, only 5% or 3%. I don't know. I don't remember if it was 3 or 5, but it was a very tiny percentage. Yeah. So that's about perhaps, you know, the biggest gap and the lack of understanding about the complexity of human being as integrated whole. And it actually can, go back to the psychologist or psychotherapist's work as well, if they address only psych. So it's about the integrated whole. And we are hoping that, you know, these new modalities that you are actually expert in many of them, we are hoping, you know, just being open to these different modalities can open a way to our, you know, medical system. And I think, you know, you and me and people like us, we need to be more proactive, you know, about introducing these modalities to our healthcare system, because we don't want to repeat the things that, you know, I don't know, repeated for 100 years with no results. And these days, actually, especially trauma-related issues, they're going to be more, dominant. And unfortunately, we actually had, I think, you know, we always had some trauma-based experiences in the human's history. But I'm not sure why this time things are getting more traumatic and problematic, you know, and causing many illnesses, while there wasn't like that years ago, was it? What do you think about it?
I think we understand trauma and its impact much more now. And so we talk about it more, and we understand the links. So whereas before they may have presented with a physical illness,
mm-hmm.
they may not have linked that back to some form of trauma or disruption within the system. So I think because of the level of understanding we have now, we can't ever go back to not knowing.
Yeah.
And so by default, I genuinely think, you know, all teachers should be trauma informed. I think all healthcare professionals should be trauma informed. I certainly think all coaches should be trauma informed.
Absolutely. I totally agreed. And I think that actually, even, you know, university, even primary schools teachers, university teachers, I think they all need to be 100% aware of traumas, because we all have traumas, and it's not something that, the other thing that is a little bit attached to mental health and trauma and these things are the labels. And I think we just need to remove those labels and just be comfortable with who we are. I actually see something in your bio that says, what makes people tick? Why do some people excel? Why do some struggle? So we just need to be really comfortable with these whys. And okay, so I'm a human and I'm a complex human and I'm just a combination of all of these things. Let's just discover, let's find out who I am and who I want to become. So yeah, I think, you know, putting those labels, putting those boxes, putting those very specific definitions about you need to do that, you need to do that. These things are possibly a little bit of, you know, barrier in what we need to do to regulate the whole, you know, human complex thing. Yeah.
And it's becoming very trendy to talk about regulation, to talk about breathing. And there's a lot of misinformation being out there, and you know, a lot of language that is unhelpful around it. Even just the language of take a deep breath. For most people, if you give them the instruction to take a deep breath, it actually fires up the sympathetic nervous system. Because it's not, you're not doing what you really want them to do. What you mean is a long, slow, full breath, which is a very different physiology to take a deep breath. So yeah, I think there's a lot of work to do. I think we're making some great inroads, and I'm loving the material that's coming out. I think there's certainly some people who are still welded to the quick fix, and they want to take a snippet of that information and create some magic tool or magic button that they will claim is the quick way. And while I do sometimes see very significant changes in a short period of time, my reality for most people is it is a longer journey to go within and really understand yourself and your body. And that even once you've made a change, you then need to learn to live with those new changes.
Absolutely.
I had a beautiful client this last week. We're Monday, aren't we? I had a beautiful client last week who came to me under the guise of wanting to stop smoking. Actually, as we talked, it was clear it was nothing really to do with smoking. Smoking was a symptom
of emotional
of what she'd done to try to cover up what the real problem was. The real problem was, she thought she'd got to the bottom of that, which was in terms of wanting to be part of the in crowd and being accepted. But of course, there was a belief underneath of that. Why would you need to do that? And it was a belief of, I'm not good enough. And, you know, beautiful transformation for that lady. And I've had some emails with her over the weekend, and she just feels completely renewed and invigorated and hopeful and excited about what next, because that's gone. And I know that that will open up challenges for her as she tries to live a different way, as she tries to do things differently in her behaviors, as her patterns start to adjust. So I'm absolutely not an advocate of quick fix. I like to work with complexity.
Me either. Absolutely. Because quick fix actually, maybe just, maybe it's just a good thing just for survival, just to survive. But it's not lasting. I'm with you. I'm absolutely supporting that complexity, which is taking time and energy and effort. And, you know, it's a lot, it's like about, you know, butterflying. It's not easy, it's painful, and it takes time. You can't do that, you know, you have to wait just to go through the stages. And I really appreciate that you brought the point of, yes, a lot of problems in our humans right now, including mental, emotional, or even physical problems, rooted in the feeling, in the emotion that I'm not enough.
That is, when you go back to those core beliefs, there's just a few core beliefs that we tend to all go back to, one or other of them. I think the other major challenge, and we haven't got time to talk about that today, but the other major kind of arm of health is social. And we've just had 2 years where we've been forced apart from each other and not to connect and not to co-regulate. And I don't think we've even begun to see the fallout of that yet. I mean, mental health figures are already going up, but I would imagine we're going to see way more than mental health figures going up as a response to what's been going on in the last couple of years. So for me, I see that as a really hopeful invitation, if you like, that now more than ever we need the sort of work that we do.
That's absolutely correct, and that's why this is actually one of the major themes emerged from my PhD thesis 12 years ago, connectedness. Connectedness is absolutely, it was a major themes in the way that people with chronic illnesses, people with diabetes type 1 defined spirituality. It's all about connectedness. Mm-hmm. And that is so strong. And that is all about human being, because human being, you know, wired in a way to be connected. They are all related beings. And yeah, I agree. The last 2 years, and that's why we are here, to talk about heart coherence, to talk about heart connection. And yes, and I just, you know, I know that we have so many things to talk about for hours and hours, Suzanne, but I'm going actually to ask you a question about, because you have been chosen as a finalist in 2022 for ANLP Awards. So how do you find NLP for audience who may not be familiar with NLP? NLP is, you know, the abbreviation of neuro-linguistic programming. How do you relate NLP to this, you know, regulation?
I think NLP is kind of like the foundation to all of it. Mm-hmm. That without NLP, you lose so much. The power of language, the power of understanding how people process information, and for me that gets extended into heart and gut through MBIT, which came out of NLP.
Yeah.
So I think NLP is cool. The number of other modalities that I have trained in that have NLP in it without mentioning NLP.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So it's just this beautiful grounded foundation stone that underpins everything I do.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's involved with both language, with actually language beliefs, and also definitely nervous system. So I definitely believe that is a very powerful tool for that, you know, regulation. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I hope one day our medical system can understand better these things and just integrate them. But you know, there is another discussion about evidence-based practice that, you know, possibly we can discuss I don't know, in another podcast. My point is, evidence is not always evidence. You know, it's a little bit tricky that sometimes we don't have the 100% reliable and robust evidence, and we still use them as evidence. So that's another thing. So we do have a lot of, you know, evidence about NLP, but I guess my point is we have more, and I expect to see definitely way more evidence about NLP in everything, you know, mental health, physical health, chronic illnesses management, and social life. So let's hope that we can include those kinds of evidence in our healthcare system too, because so that's another thing that, you know, I'm teaching evidence-based practice, and usually I'm just talking to my students that, you know, okay, so it's not 100%. Whatever you find there as evidence is evidence, because there are a lot of other things behind it that we need to find out and we need to discover. So yeah, I think, you know, everything you do about NLP and braining, you know, that heart coherence, all of map of meaning, that I love it. So we definitely need to stick to these kinds of evidence more and use them in our practice, certainly. So yeah, I really enjoy, you know, talking to you, Suzanne, but let's just, you know, for this podcast, let's just stop at this point and tell people how and where can they find you.
Certainly by name on social media, and my company name, Embraining for Success, is probably the easiest place to find me. And then I have a couple of websites. Embraining for Success is one, and a new one where you can find us is the luminosityproject.nz, which is a new collaboration that I'm doing with Sarah Carruthers about radical wholeness. Mm-hmm. And
she's a co-author of your new book. Yeah,
absolutely. And we're looking at exactly what we've been talking about today in terms of kind of the holistic approach to health and well-being, but also that complex systemic dynamic approach.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you hold that space? How do you help people navigate through that space when it could look too complex and too mm-hmm. systemic?
Mm-hmm.
So it's finding that balance between the magic bullet and reality and holding people's hands so they can walk through the middle, find a way to get regulation and healing and what we're calling radical wholeness. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, the luminosityproject.nz or Embraining for Success. And do feel free, reach out if you've got any questions or you want to know more. All sorts of stuff going on. We teach embraining to people globally. I'm one of two master trainers in embraining globally, so travel around the world with that, and a number of other things, including the gratitude journal, which is coming out soon.
Excellent. I'm excited.
All evidence-based. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, real evidence based. So yeah, can you just, you know, shoot me all those links via email, Suzanne, so I can put them all, you know, in the show notes for the audience. If they want to just access to any of those websites or links, they can just easily find it in the show notes. So as our tradition, we like you to share one inspirational message or one more thing that you want audience, you know, to know, just to finish the podcast with.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with the context of luminosity.
Mm-hmm.
That we know some animals are bioluminescent. We know about fireflies, for example. We know about some jellyfish. But humans are also bioluminescent.
Mm.
And we've now been able to show that through imaging, and we can see that it often shows up in the cheeks, face mm-hmm. of somebody. So my kind of question or invitation out really is, are you letting your light shine?
Mm-hmm.
Are you letting the world dim your light?
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like it's not okay to shine brightly?
Mm-hmm.
And for what purpose? You were designed, you were created to shine. So yeah, that's my little thought, inspiration, is are you aware that you not only, like we often talk about shining as if it's metaphorical with humans, but it's literal.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And we so often dampen down our own light. And by doing that, we're then disadvantaging everyone around us by not sharing that light and sharing that glow.
Wow.
How can we get back to that beautiful, yeah, shining a light high on a hill? And being okay, being that person that can stand tall and be the lighthouse for others.
Suzanne, I loved it. I so loved it. And I think, you know, I want to invite you to another podcast more specifically talking about that. Thank you so much for being, you know, here. And yeah, and I'm sure that we have a lot more to discuss, you know, in the next episodes. I hope, you know, the audience, and I'm sure audience also enjoyed, and they can find you, you know, through your websites and all the links to discuss more about your amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's been my absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for inviting me onto the show.
Thank you so much. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the podcast From Outer Wellness to Inner Wellness. I hope you enjoyed, and I hope that brought you some points and benefits for your inner wellness. And I appreciate any comments, feedback, reviews, and your subscription. Thank you.